Officially.
It's official.
We didn't really go anywhere, but
people were worried though.
No one was worried.
They were.
I don't think anyone was worried.
And yet we're back.
Yes, we are back. I am back from vacation.
Ooh. Yeah. Where'd you go?
Someplace warm.
Ooh.
Warm and sandy.
The oven at first is what I thought.
No.
Not the oven.
Not the oven. Right. No, I went to Turks and Caicos.
Ooh.
Yeah, just fancy. For a little bit of a vacation.
You fancy, huh?
And I had a good time.
That's good.
Yeah, I was very pleased that they were taking, to get into Turks and Caicos, like they make you do a number of things to be able to even get on the plane, which made me feel nice and comfortable. And then to be able to get back into the United States, I had to do a couple of extra things also. So they are taking COVID very seriously. They are taking COVID very seriously, even though I am fully vaccinated, but they don't really care about that.
I'm just glad you're back.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Water was beautiful.
Water
I've been there
beautiful.
Once. I was there when my kids were young. My parents went with us. We want to go back as a crew. It's a good time there.
Yeah. I went with my best friend, and that wasn't originally the plan. Originally, and I think a lot of people probably can relate to this, you hit your friends up, say, hey, want to go on a trip?
Hot girl summer.
Everybody's got 800 reasons why they can't go, right? So the average person, therefore, does not go on a trip. Tiffany Hawkins does not operate that way. So I booked the trip for myself. I was going to go solo dolo. And then when I came back to them and said, hey, guys, I know you weren't able to go, but I'm going. My flights are booked. My accommodations are booked.
What? You would do that?
Yes. That's the response I got. And then everybody started hitting me up like, I mean, I didn't know you were serious. I mean, I could still make it. I can move some things around at work.
I could
do some things. And so, yeah. So then all of a sudden people were available to go.
Yeah.
But I had a really great time, me and my bestie, and we relaxed. I ate a lot of really good food. Just
good.
Hung out.
Good.
Hung out. This was the chill trip.
Do you feel refreshed?
I do feel refreshed because this was 100% the chill trip. There's a turn-up trip that's in the plans for the summer. So this was not that. This was all relaxed and zen. The next time you hear me talk about going on a vacation, that will be the turn-up trip. I will be exhausted after that trip.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like you're ready to get into it then.
Sure.
Because
let's do it.
You are revitalized.
Revitalized.
Yeah, not me. My kids are terrified to go anywhere right now. So
you got to just nudge them out there a little bit at a time. Like, don't automatically put them on a plane. Maybe we start off at the park and then we get to I don't know how I feel about theme parks, to be honest. Like, I know for kids that's a thing, theme parks and water parks. That to me still feels extremely risky.
Yeah. Well, to my daughter, if you ask her, a restaurant is extremely risky. So we're not getting to a theme
like
park.
A beach, though. A beach where everybody has their own space, that feels safe.
Yeah.
Like, no one comes within our space, we're good.
Maybe you could talk to her for me?
Listen,
put in a word?
Tell her to holler at me.
Okay.
If I talk to her, she's going to be asking for St. Bart's, Turks and Caicos. She's not going to be asking for Jersey beaches.
I'm down.
Okay.
Talk to her.
Okay. That's not what we're talking about today.
No.
We are talking about other things today.
We're talking about franchising.
Franchising. It's taken us a long time to get to this conversation. If you know us from Sirius XM World, this was a more regular conversation.
Yes.
We wanted to ease into it with our podcast crew.
Yeah.
Y'all don't really know us for franchising. Y'all don't really know how much of our background or foreground that is, to be honest. And we didn't want to lead with that. But we feel like we've laid enough foundation where we can start talking about how we occupy the franchising space and start educating you if that's something that you're interested
in. Yeah, we got into franchising almost 10 years ago now. It's crazy
looking
back.
Speak for yourself.
You were right there with me.
You started without me. I came in a little bit later.
Either way, we started almost 10 years ago.
Almost 10 years ago.
I was probably a year ahead of you with my first deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you were right there with me. But the reason we got into franchising, originally it was a client. Like, we had a client who had played pro sports and he had retired at the age of 32. And he had a lot of money. We had already done all the financial planning things in the world. But this was a man who's sitting around with nothing to do anymore. We started noticing that when all that free time was on this man's hands, he was going to get into something financially that might not be the best move for him. And so we said, why not allow us to help you find a business that you can actually start that is not, you know, something written on a napkin by someone that wants you to write the check and you'll put up all the money and you'll have a minority stake. Why not allow us to help you find a business you can get behind with a reputable company that will help you to execute?
Yeah. Plus, when you think about these pro athletes and you think about all the people who are predators around them, who, as you mentioned, are like preying on their dollars and are like, yo, I got a new idea. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to, why don't we launch like a donut company, but at night we sell liquor? Like all types of random bad ideas.
Idea.
You know what I mean? Like, why don't we do a car wash, but the girls, only it's only girls washing the cars, and then we sell cheesesteaks.
You're
like,
on fire.
Now,
these are good
ideas.
These
are horrible ideas. Please, nobody take these ideas. But that happens often, and oftentimes these athletes don't have someone to step in and say, hey, that's a really, really bad idea. You totally should not do that. They just have people egging them on, and they end up in these business ventures that are only not profitable, but end up causing a lot of risk for them later on down the line, or there's some sort of shootout or something bad happens, and then it's all on the name of the athlete, the investor. So as Alan mentioned, we had this pro athlete client, and instead of just saying, no, that's a really horrible idea, and he had none of these ideas, he wasn't trying to do the cheesecake, the cheesesteak car wash or any of those things.
Although that has legs.
That does not have legs. Instead, Alan's response was, well, let me find something that is less risky, more suitable, and more likely to be profitable for you.
That's right. And so along the way, we've learned that like franchising is a great idea for the person who is entrepreneurial. They've got some cash, they've got some time on their hands, and they want to get their hands dirty, but they don't have a business idea, right? And so we've been able to help our clients become franchisees. We've helped folks make investments in franchisees with an arm's length where they're not getting their hands dirty. But we've also become franchisees ourselves.
Yeah, I'd like to call us more like franchise extraordinaire.
Okay.
I think we're franchise gurus.
Ooh.
Franchise.
I don't like guru.
No?
Give
What's
me
wrong
another
with
one.
Guru?
Everybody's a guru at something.
Are
nowadays.
They? I'm franchise savants. No?
I think idiot savant, but okay. No. Franchise.
We are just... When it comes to franchising,
we're good at it.
Okay, we got it down. And to Alan's point, I think we've approached it from all sides, whether it's getting people into franchising, educating large groups on franchising, and actually just being franchisees ourselves. And we're franchisees not only of one concept, but of multiple concepts, and we have multiple locations.
Yeah, at one point we had 9 locations across fitness
Listen.
And dry cleaning. We're down to 4.
Yeah.
But we're good. We closed some. We sold some.
But I think that even speaks to our story, right? Like, we are going to give you the honest truth about franchising. It's really, really great in some areas. It's been great for us. In other areas, it hasn't been great. It's not all sunny days. And so, to Alan's point, in COVID, as many businesses, we closed a couple of our franchises for good.
Sure did.
Forever. And honestly, while it wasn't easy, it was the best decision for us and our partners as business owners.
And the businesses that we still own, we're really proud of.
Yeah.
And we're spending that much more time in them, developing them, growing them. But let's talk about franchising. The goal of today's show is to make sure that you, the listener, have a better understanding of franchising, a better understanding of whether it's for you or not, and really the ideas on how to get involved, if that's something you want to get involved with.
Yeah, I think so many people, when you hear the term franchise, like, you automatically think of these huge, the McDonald's and, you know what I mean, the Chick-fil-A and all these major franchises. And first things first, let's start off by telling you that franchises come in all sizes.
Yeah.
So when we say maybe franchising is or is not for you, you don't have to think about these big boxes. There are franchises that cost $5,000 to get started, right? There are other franchises. IKEA is a franchise. Like,
that's a little more.
That's
than 5,
a little. It's a little bit more that's than 5 racks. That might not be. I don't know who would want to own an IKEA, first of all, but that's your business. But franchises literally come in all sizes, all capital requirements. So don't rule yourself out when you think about these large, you know, 1,000 location brands. There are small franchises out here that are making big money for people.
I love it. So what is a franchise? A franchise is a license to use a franchisor's trademark and proprietary business system at a specific location or within a certain geographic territory for a defined period of time.
It's a lot of specifics. It's a lot of specific things during a specific time at a specific place.
Okay. They're giving you their brand and they're telling you how to run the business.
Yeah.
And they're basically saying you can do it in this city, in this state.
For the next 10 years, for the next 20 years, yes. You can do this thing right here. We're down.
After 10 years, you're going to have to re-up. Yeah. You have to pay again.
Yeah, and you have to decide if you want to re-up. You might be like, I'm out of here. Most people, I think, are like, you know what? I like this thing. It becomes a part of their life. It becomes their family business. They're either growing or they're at least maintaining. Now, what's the point of getting in bed with a franchisor, right? Like, you could be like, listen, I got great ideas. I don't need anybody else's brand. I don't need to hook up with somebody else to do this thing. It depends, right? It really depends on what type of person you are. The value of the franchisor, so they give you their brand, right? And so mm-hmm. brand awareness is always a really great thing.
They let you borrow it.
You know, they let you borrow it, let you use the name. They give you pretty good training, pretty extensive training depending on the franchise that you're in. They give you an operations manual. They connect you with vendors that oftentimes come with some level of discounts. They help support quality control. So they definitely give you the blueprint and equip you with everything you need to be able to know how to open the doors, right? They don't get the doors open for you.
No, you gotta open those yourself.
But they will equip you with what you need to know how to do it if you are moving forward the way you're supposed to move forward.
Yes. What you're getting from a franchise, again, their brand recognition. Like when you think about McDonald's, the customer knows that when I see those golden arches.
Right. You know what I mean?
I know those fries. I can already taste them.
I know for a fact that the ice cream machine is going to be broken.
Oh, come on.
Right? Like these, or when you see a Chick-fil-A, you know.
It's going to be closed on Sundays.
It's going to be closed on Sundays. But, you know, not even trying to be funny, the brand awareness, honestly, I think is oftentimes the strongest value because you've got some buy-in. You've got some legitimacy from the day you open your doors. You don't have to convince people that this is a real business, that we really know what we're doing. People don't have to guess what they should expect. They'd be like, oh, I know Popeyes. Okay, I know, but I'm going to get the biscuit.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
The chicken sandwich,
you know? And so it just helps you from a marketing perspective and from a growth perspective, have some value from day one, the moment you open the door.
They also give you some innovation. Like, you remember when they came up with the spicy, crispy chicken at Kentucky Fried Chicken? And it like revolutionized the world.
At least my
household. The spicy chicken changed my whole dynamic of my house.
I don't think KFC was the first one to come out with the spicy chicken. I think it was Popeyes who did the spicy
crispy. I said
the spicy. Well, Popeyes is automatically crispy, right?
Yeah, but so KFC had the spicy crispy though.
Okay, I don't know.
That innovation comes to you for free.
It does.
Okay,
come,
it's not free.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of this is free. But as Alan has mentioned, when you are working with a franchisor, you are working with a brand that is always evolving, right? And so you don't have to be the one sitting at the kitchen table at night talking about what we're going to do next. What new ideas can we have? You know, should we put, you know, hot sauce in the batter or whatever the case is? You have people constantly working behind the scenes on what are we going to roll out next? How can we make the brand better? And then they supply you again with the materials and the know-how to be able to do that.
They also give you the benefit of all the mistakes that have been made.
Yeah.
Like that is key. So yeah. Like that operating manual, that game plan for how to run that business is extremely valuable. I'll give you an example. When we got into the fitness business, when you're building a gym, it's not a cheap endeavor. And there's little decisions that you can make here and there that could cost you a lot of money. And I just remember in the gym, the first gym we built, our architect said, why don't we cut cement and put your outlets into the floor for your treadmills. And we're like, okay. That sounds like a good idea.
Doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Our franchisor came in and said, that's like an extra $10,000 to cut the cement.
Oh.
Why don't you instead put a little strip and have the outlets just plugged in into the little strip? And we're like, oh, save 10 grand?
And these things don't seem like a lot. Like they don't seem like a big deal. But when you've got literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment to purchase and machines and hiring, like you really want to save every dollar that you can. And so in this operations manual, in this training, you are taught how much to spend on what things, what will make you profitable, what will not make you profitable. And again, then you are connected with the vendors that can supply you what you need, oftentimes at some sort of bulk discount.
Absolutely. And those discounts matter. Like if you think about, again, going back to the example of McDonald's. We keep killing McDonald's examples.
Who is
today.
The vendor on the ice cream machines at McDonald's? No, for real. If there are McDonald's franchisees who are listening or if someone from McDonald's corporate is listening, You need to fire your ice cream machine vendor. Like, yeah. It's ruining your reputation. It's a funny joke, but, you know, summer is approaching and somebody's going to want that milkshake, that McFlurry. And it's annoying.
It's part of the brand.
Okay, it's a part of the brand. And so you can change that. There's an opportunity for change right there. If your PR team is trying to figure out how McDonald's can do better, fire your ice cream vendor and get a new one. We want the McFlurries popping. I've never even had a McFlurry, but I hear y'all's pain.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, there you have it. But no, this idea of volume discounts. So again, McDonald's buys a lot of potatoes, a lot of ground beef. If you were opening Tiffany's Burger Shack, you're going to pay a lot more for your potatoes and your ground beef than McDonald's does.
Yeah, because McDonald's is buying in such volume that they probably get it for cents on the dollar versus me being an individual business owner, I have to pay at cost.
Yeah. And that's a value. Yeah. Being able to get that volume discount.
In addition, it's just also helpful to be a part of a team, to have a network of people who you can reach out to and mm-hmm. rely on when you get into a franchise concept. One of the first things that they do is set you up with other franchisees, existing franchisees in the system, so that you can just ask them some real questions like, yo, bro, like, is this all that they say it is? Tell me how you really feel. And Alan and I have done a lot of this due diligence in our other franchises. And sometimes you get really great responses. And sometimes people are like, nah, like, yeah, it ain't, I don't really mess with them like that.
I hate them.
It's been some beef in the day, you know? And so again, these are parts of, you know, becoming a part of a franchise. But as we mentioned, this is not free. Like, you have to pay, you've got to pay a fee just to get down. Like, mm-hmm. you've got to put up a good amount of money. Oftentimes it's anywhere from like $10,000 to $50,000 to $100,000 just to get down. You might get a free t-shirt or a free cup, maybe a pen.
It's like a cover charge.
Yeah, it's just to get through the door. You haven't paid for any equipment. It doesn't apply towards a deposit of anything.
No.
Like, that's just what it is. You also have to pay royalty fees. Once your business is actually open, they get their money off the top. Like, before you make a dollar, before you've, you know, paid the light bill or anything like that, like, you have to consistently pay royalties. There's advertising fees oftentimes to go into the national advertising budget. Sometimes there's software fees because they do give you software to use, proprietary software. You've got to pay fees on that monthly. So it's not free. You know, they're going to get their money off top. And for some meaning us, it's worth it. Like, again, we don't have to, if Alan and I had to go out and try to find the proper software and find the proper equipment, you know, for each one of these businesses and then pay them whatever they require out of us, it would probably be a lot more expensive than, again, allowing corporate to have done all the dirty work already. And we just cut them a little bit of a check.
Another way that franchisors make money, and this is where it gets a little bit shady. So
this is where the shade happens.
It's rebates, meaning like sometimes
kickbacks.
They'll source the stuff for you, but then they're gonna be like, look, why don't you slide me a little something back?
Right.
To the franchisor, to the mothership.
They put a little something on it.
Yeah. And so often that's a big line item for franchisors, where they make money from the royalties, they make money from the initial get down fee, which is called the franchise fee. But they also are getting a little bit of kickback from some of those vendors.
So here's an example of what that looks like, right? Say you are in a fitness franchise.
Okay. I like fitness. I enjoy working out.
Y'all sell smoothies.
Okay.
Okay. You are required to use a particular cup vendor.
Why?
Now, I can get cups at Target. I can get cups at Costco, Restaurant mm-hmm. Depot. Like, you know, a cup is a cup. Mm-hmm. And your franchisor is like, no, you can only use these cups and you can only buy them from these people. But you kind of notice these cups are expensive as hell. Like, I think the cups at Costco will probably be a little bit cheaper. I can make more money. No, you've got to use these cups. Oftentimes that's a situation, and not every time, but oftentimes that's a situation where they're getting a cut off those cups, and that's why they're requiring you to use that more expensive vendor, because they're getting a kickback on that also. And to Alan's point, it's not right. Right? Like, we understand that's a part of the business model, but if it is causing you or preventing you from being profitable, then it's a problem.
When we talk about franchises, we often use this word frenemy.
Yeah.
Like, they're your friend, but they're also your enemy a little bit. And we'll break that down a little bit more after the break, but it's this notion that just because you're in a franchise, yes, your interests are aligned, they want you to get as much sales as possible, but there are some times when you're in conflict with your franchisor, and I think it's important to talk about that.
Yeah, so stick with us. We're going to talk about the pros and the cons, the good and the bad. We're going to tell the truth, and we're going to spread a little shade. So stick with us. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com to discover all the podcasts we have to offer. We have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out.
So I just want to start.
With the stats, the WOW franchises.
Yes, exactly.
Makeup. Yeah, same thing for me.
Okay. So we're back.
Yes.
We're talking about franchises. For those who do not know, who are not completely aware, we are franchisees. We own a number of franchises in a variety of different concepts in a variety of different states, to be honest.
And our favorite one is Zips Dry Cleaning.
Shout out to Zips Dry Cleaning. That is our favorite. I will say that.
We have Zips Dry Cleaners conveniently located in Waldorf, Maryland and Bowie, Maryland.
Yes.
We also have Retro Fitness in Catonsville, Maryland.
Yes.
And the Max Challenge of West Orange.
Yeah, West Orange, New Jersey. So Alan did not necessarily say those in order of our favorites, but those are some of the concepts that we are in. We also talked about earlier how, you know, we had to close some locations permanently due to COVID. Mm-hmm. But the one thing we haven't talked about is that we are opening more locations. Like, COVID did not rain on our parade. We had to make some business decisions, but we are still very optimistic about the franchises that we are in. And we're really, really excited about the growth that we have ahead. We'll talk about that more in maybe further podcasts as more locations open. But franchising, it is a thing that people oftentimes talk about but don't really know that much about, and we are extremely versed in it. We've made other people franchisees. We've partnered with other people who've wanted to become franchisees but don't really want to take on the burden themselves, and we ourselves are franchisees. So we are giving you the tea. One thing that just think about, I think when we think about franchisees, we think about so many different things. I think, as we mentioned earlier, there are franchises out there that you don't even know is a franchise, right? Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned, like IKEA, that's a franchise. There are a number of businesses out there, even if they're not all over the country, they might just be in your town. It could still be a franchise. Franchises make up less than, though, 3% of all businesses, but they represent nearly 12% of all jobs.
So that means that 1 out of every 8 employees
works at a franchise
in America.
Shout out to the franchise.
Works at a franchise.
Keeping us employed out here.
That's huge.
Now, 57% of franchises are restaurant concepts. So they are restaurant locations. So franchises really have a thing for the food industry. There's also, again, auto industry, office cleaning, commercial cleaning, auto repair. It goes across the gamut, but food. Franchising really has its foot in the restaurant industry.
Franchises make up over 10% of our economy.
Wow.
That's big.
That's a good amount. I like that.
There are over 3,500 brands across 30 different industries. Of course, food is the big one, but also fitness, repairs, cleaning, maintenance. These are all really big ones within franchising as well.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of like Molly Maids? Molly Maids. That's a franchise.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Okay.
They do residential cleaning.
I don't know. I don't ask me all that. I just know what the brand looks like. I know they have these little cars.
Yeah.
We used to have one in town. We don't anymore, but we used to have like a Molly Maid's office in town.
I'll tell you another one you might not be thinking of is, what's the oil plant, the oil change place? What's the little oil plant?
I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name.
Jiffy Lube.
Jiffy Lube.
Jiffy Lube's another franchise.
Yeah.
You don't think about that.
You don't think about that.
We're mentioning these because like, we are accustomed to thinking that these businesses are out there and they're these big corporate behemoths. You can own these things.
Yeah.
Black people can own these things.
Yeah.
Women Diverse people of all colors and shapes and sizes can own these businesses.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Like pre-COVID, Alan and I used to do a lot of speaking engagements on franchising. And the primary reason why is because there just weren't enough people who look like us in the franchising space.
No.
Like franchising is not hard. It can be very easy to do if you follow the rules. You don't have to be a millionaire to own a business whatsoever. And it's interesting. We go to these franchise conferences, we speak at these engagements, and there are people who have been in the United States for a year, but they're ready to be their own entrepreneur. They're ready to own a franchise. And, you know, coming from such a disadvantaged situation, like you're just learning the language, you don't have that many resources, but you're confident enough in yourself that you feel like I can do this. We just want more people that look like us to also be as confident in themselves to own a business. It doesn't have to be your own concept, but it is a wealth generator. It is an opportunity for you to be an entrepreneur. And it's also an opportunity to be a part of a brand or a group of entrepreneurs that will allow you to be profitable. Also, 55% of franchisees own multiple locations. So what ends up happening is you open one location and you're doing so well, or you really got the business down that you feel confident enough to open more locations. And so those deals can be structured as like a master franchisee. You could be considered a developer. There's a number of different names for it, but you can either go into the deal knowing you want to open multiple locations, or you can start off with one and then start growing and have interest in owning more, opening more.
I love it. So before the break, we were talking a lot about the pros and cons, but let's go a little deeper.
Yeah.
The pros and cons. One of the first advantages that we've experienced firsthand is really just around the success rate. If you are starting out with a proven brand, if there's a track record of success, your odds of success are just a little higher, I believe, than your typical startup business, where you're starting from scratch from a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah, as Alan mentioned, like all the mistakes have been made. They've kind of ironed out the kinks. They've worked out the network and the relationships. They've done it enough times. They've repeated this system probably in a variety of different markets that they understand how to make this thing work. It's not fail-proof, but I mean, if you follow the rules, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to do all right. And so again, franchises tend to have a higher success rate versus startups where you got to figure it all out yourself from scratch. And it's likely that you're going to make a lot of costly mistakes that may make or break your business.
That brand awareness we talked about earlier, also really, really key.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to build a brand right. from scratch.
Right.
Like,
here's the thing. If you have a love for a chicken sandwich, right? Let's just a chicken sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide to open, you know, Boomer's Boomin' Chicken.
Okay, that sounds okay. Like a winner.
Okay.
I like this
But
place.
I don't know. I don't really know you like that, right? Now, because especially if it's a Popeyes across the street and a Chick-fil-A up the street, I got other options where I know exactly what I'm going to get. I know what my price point is. I have a good idea what my customer service experience is going to be like. I don't know if I'm coming by Boomer's Boomin' Chicken first.
Please just come by. Try it.
And then you have to spend a lot more money in marketing trying to convince people to come into your location versus, as we mentioned earlier, when you are aligned with these other brands that have strong brand awareness on day one. The moment you put your sign up, people are going to be texting their friends like, you know, they're building a Popeyes up on Sanford Street.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we got Chick-fil-A coming. I will tell you, in our town, we got a Chick-fil-A two towns over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A couple of months ago, people were talking about it like we were getting a new NFL team. Yo, you know the Chick-fil-A is coming. What day you think is open? What do you think is going to be? You know what I mean?
We're so fat right. in our town.
But what I'm saying is like, having that brand awareness really does mean something. Now, we just happen to be extremely close to the situation because our client was the one who opened the Chick-fil-A. We decided, hey, you know, on opening day, we'll swing by, show some support. We couldn't even get in the damn parking lot.
Yeah,
it was so many cars. People were posting pictures on Facebook of the line. We were just trying to show some support. But because of the brand awareness and the buzz and the excitement around the brand, day one until has been a lights out experience for them. And I hate to say this, it's very unlikely that will be the experience in a brand that people haven't heard of.
Yeah, and it breaks my heart a little bit, this idea of brand awareness for these national franchise brands, because I've seen the small business owner create Boomer's Boom Boom Chicken.
Right.
And they don't have that same level of excitement.
And it doesn't mean the product isn't as good. It's just that you don't get you're not legitimate. You have to earn. You've got to really pull and scrape for every single customer versus, yo, we out here.
Yeah. It's sad, though, because, like, when you go to New York City, one of the things that you love is, like, the uniqueness of the restaurants.
Right, the mom and pops.
When you go to, like, Indianapolis, you see nothing but franchises.
But to be honest with you, don't act like when the first Chick-fil-A didn't open up in New York City, we wasn't out there.
We were there.
We walked past all the mom and pops running to the Chick-fil-A just like everybody else. And so I do agree that there has to be a lot more value to these startups and these mom and pops because they oftentimes have a better product and probably even a better customer service experience and they value your dollar more. But again, we're talking about if you're trying to get into a business that's going to honestly pop from day one, franchising is your best bet. That brand awareness is going to save you a lot of money in marketing and bring in a lot of customers.
Yeah, when we opened our first Zips dry cleaner,
we
had people knocking on the door while we were in construction. Like, look, I got clothes right here in my trunk.
And so it's interesting that you say that. For most people listening, you've probably never even heard of Zips dry cleaners. But if you live in the DMV area, dry cleaning goes down at Zips. Okay? That is top tier. That's the brand that you know, right? And so to Alan's point, we don't even live in the DMV area, but we knew the brand was strong there. And so we wanted to stay in the market with the strong brand awareness. And literally people were banging on the door. Our opening day, we weren't supposed to open till like 12 or 2 o'clock that day. Because honestly, I think we were waiting for our permits from the town. And they were banging on the doors at like 9, 10 a.m. with clothes in hand, foaming at the mouth. Like, it was ridiculous. And Alan, being the rebel that he is, decided to take in the clothes. We did not have our permits yet. We were not allowed legally to take the clothes in, but he just couldn't turn these customers down. But just the brand awareness.
Why'd you have to tell the government on me? Because
I want people to know. I mean, it's too late now. That was 2-3 years ago. We out here now. We got the clothes. Okay? We got the money.
We cleaned them.
We cleaned them.
Safely.
They got them back.
Nobody got hurt.
But I will say that just speaks to the brand awareness. That's why you're paying the franchise fees. Like, if you think about it, the money that you're putting out towards franchise fees is the money that you're saving on marketing. We did not have to put a single flyer out, do a single ad to get that type of response on day one of opening our Zips franchise.
No, that's a fact. Thanks for announcing to the world that I broke the law.
Broke the law.
Not really.
You did.
No, we took in the clothes, but we didn't charge them yet.
Whatever. Other things that are pros of being a part of a franchise.
I'd say it's the research ability.
Yeah.
Like, what I mean by that is, like, you could go and try to launch your chicken joint, but you don't have the empirical data on what works and what doesn't work.
Right.
When we launched our first dry cleaner, we were able to research all the locations that did really well and come up with a demographic profile of the perfect place to put a dry cleaner.
We also talked to the owners of these locations, and we can ask them questions. What are you doing? Why is this working out for you? And conversely, for the stores that are not performing as well, we can have a conversation with them as well. What's happening? Like, why do you think things aren't going as well as you'd want them to go? We have the ability, as Alan mentioned, we have real tangible data. Like, we can look at their store numbers. We can look at their metrics, some of their KPIs. Like, there's a number of things that we can really look right down on paper and figure things out. And it allows us to help make decisions on what we are going to do. When you're not in a franchise system, you can't just be running up on people's businesses, asking them a bunch of questions because I'm about to be a competitor in your town, right? Like, you can't do that. You don't have the goodwill. You don't have the relationship to be able to get that information for them to be able to share that information with you. But again, when you're a part of a franchise system, you're a part of a group, you're a part of a network, it is beneficial to the other person for you to succeed, for the franchise to succeed, for there to be consistent growth. So they are happy to turn that information over to you and to talk to you.
Additionally, every franchise is required by law to register a franchise disclosure document with the government.
Yes.
And what that means is that they have certain disclosures they have to make.
Every year.
One of the disclosures that's often made is financial performance. Sometimes they'll tell you on average how much their sales are. Sometimes they'll tell you how much expenses and profits are. And so when you're thinking about getting into a business, you might not have any idea how much money you're going to make.
Right.
But with a franchise, you can often have some really good estimates on how much money you can make, which will help you to determine if this is the right business for you or not.
Yeah, and I do want us to just take a second to give a little bit more time to this FDD, the franchise disclosure document. This is your Bible, okay? This is your franchise Bible. When you reach out to a franchisor and just express interest, the first thing that you want to be able to get is that FDD. As Alan mentioned, it is filed annually, and they give updates on their performance, on their top performing stores, if any store is closed, were there any legal issues, how much you're going to spend in opening a store, just a variety of different things that you want to know. So let's just be clear about something. I just want to put this out there. If you are talking to a business owner and they're like, yeah, we're a franchise, you know what I mean? Like, we got locations. We got 3 locations across Detroit. You know, we are a franchise. They have to give you an FDD. If they do not have an FDD, they are not a franchise.
Yeah, that's a fact.
They just got some locations. They're not legally able to sell you licenses for you to be able to grow this brand elsewhere. They just out here doing stuff. And that's fine. But I just want you to be clear. I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, we're a franchise. We're going to franchise this concept. You know, we're franchising all across Minneapolis. Listen, feel free. But if they try to sell you on getting involved in this business, if you don't get an FDD, it's not a franchise. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but just know all these things, all these benefits and all these resources that we are talking about, you are likely not going to get.
And that FDD is filed with the Federal Trade Commission, not just something they typed up on Excel and,
and
Word. You know, that's an important distinguishing point. But so let's talk about some of the negatives, some of the cons of franchising. Because we did say the franchise is your friend. They're also your enemy.
Mm-hmm. You can take your sunglasses off because it's going to get shady.
Oh, my gosh. The first thing I'd say is that franchises, on average, are an active business that require a real-life commitment from you.
Yeah.
It's not like we did a show a couple shows back about passive investments.
This is not really a passive thing. It can be, but like it requires a lot of your effort. As Alan mentioned, this is a real commitment. You are signing a contract that you are going to be in this business oftentimes for a minimum of 10 years. You can't decide after year 4, I'm good. I don't like this anymore. I've made enough money. You will legally be on the hook. You will owe that franchise money for the remainder of that contract, and or they will sue you. So y'all might be friends one day, but the moment you decide you want to walk away or you want to move on, it becomes a legal battle and y'all are no longer friends.
Thank you for that. I'd also say, though, this notion of an active commitment means like most franchises have employees. If you have a business with employees, you've got to actively manage that business. You can't just trust that they're going to do the right thing. We've had employees steal. We've had employees use drugs.
Sexual harassment.
We've had employees try to sell drugs.
Yeah.
Like
it's a lot.
It goes down.
It goes down.
And so it's a commitment. I'll tell you a funny story. One of the first franchises we did, one day our partner decides to fire like all the managers one day. Like, you know what? I'm going to fire them. I'm sick of it. And that feels good to be able to fire someone that's messing up your business. But he had not considered that who's going to open the door the next day.
Yeah.
And we started getting calls from customers like, hey, how come I can't get in? Oh, we fired everyone.
Yeah.
Now we got to physically drive down there and open the doors ourselves. So it's an active business that if you're not good at managing people, if you're not good at complexity and managing a lot of different problems at the same time, then this might not be good for you. So that's one of the negatives or disadvantages of franchising, is that it really is an active business.
Yeah. Another thing that we've talked about is fees. These fees start on day one and they don't go away ever. And the fees don't get reduced if you're having a bad month, if COVID hits, if you're not making any money. These monthly royalties, monthly advertising fees, monthly software fees, your franchisor may be nice enough to be like, all right, you know, it's COVID, we'll try to hook you up. But not really. It's not a requirement. And so you may be looking at your line items, you may be looking at your P&Ls and saying like, yo, we're not making any money. But the franchisor is going to make their money regardless. No matter what you're experiencing, no matter what you are going through, you are always going to have to pay these fees. And they range. You know, royalties could be 3 to 5%.
6%
of gross sales. This is not what's left after you pay your bills. They get their money off top. They take it straight out of your bank account. You don't even get the right to send it to them, send it a little late. I'm going to send it next week. No. They take it first before you get any of your money. Same thing with advertising software and any other associated fees. They take it. Like, you don't have a say in it. You don't get to see it. You don't let it, it doesn't get to sit in your bank account for a little bit. And again, they are going to make their money even if you're not making any money. You could be losing money every month. The franchisor will not make that their problem, and they're going to make their money off of you no matter what. Sometimes when you're really struggling, again, or when COVID hits, that's not a really good feeling. And so just something to think about. That is something that's a part of the franchise system that's not necessarily a part of the startup system that, you know, can be a con.
Absolutely. On this notion of costs and fees, your cost of business might actually be higher than one of your competitors.
Yeah.
Right? So like if I'm running a franchise and I have to pay 6% of my sales to the mothership, and I have to, that's for royalties, and I have to pay, let's say, 4% of my sales to the mothership for marketing, for the National Marketing Fund, that means that I'm bringing in 90 cents
right
off the top. Now, if the guy next to me is not a franchisee, that means he's bringing in a dollar.
Right.
Right. And so, yes, I do like that I've got brand awareness. I do like that maybe I get some volume discounting. I do like that I have a business plan that I think has worked before and should work for me. But it could put me at an economic disadvantage, the fact that I might have to pay out revenue before it comes in to the franchisor.
So we're going to go to break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the biggest cons of being a part of a franchise. We're just telling you the truth. We're telling you the good and bad. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.
Ooh, it's the pathway to freedom. It's leading to the North Star.
My name is Ray King, and I'm the co-host of Married to the Movement and Woke at Work for the North Star. I love these podcasts and the opportunity they give me to speak to issues of family, justice, and workplace diversity. If this sounds like the kind of work you'd like to support, please consider becoming a member at thenorthstar.com. You can support the writers, activists, technicians, and storytellers of color who are committed to the cause of liberation journalism. Again, that's thenorthstar.com. We appreciate your support.
Momentum.
So we are back.
Yes.
We are talking about franchising.
We're breaking it all down.
We are breaking it down, and we're giving the good and the bad. We're not just telling you all the wonderful sides, and it has been a good overall experience for us. We're talking about the bad sides too. So one of the major cons about being in a franchise is that you've got to follow the rules. And if you are a person, if you are a person who is very creative and wants to have a lot of ideas and wants to input, you know, all of your great ideas, there's a good chance that franchising is not for you. You have some liberties. You have some liberties around marketing and little tweaks here and there, but that is it. You've got to use their vendors, their systems, their products. If it's a restaurant, you can only serve their items. Even if you're like, listen, but I make a mean banana pudding. No, like, yeah, ain't gonna be no banana pudding on this menu. Like, there are very specific rules from day one that never end. And you have to follow them. And for some people, that's like, great, I don't want to have to think about this. I don't want to have to come up with this on my own. But there are other people who are like, it's my business. I put my money up. If I want to do things differently, if I feel like I have a better option, if I feel like I want to implement some new things, I should be able to do that. Not only are you not able to do that, you can get sued. If you even try to revert, if you try to do anything that hasn't been fully approved by the entire corporate franchise system, this lets you know if you are fit for a franchise or not.
Yeah, they can shut you down. If you try to sell collard greens at your McDonald's, they can shut you down.
Yeah. If your ice cream machine is always broken and so you go get another one, like, it's not approved. It doesn't matter that, like, well, at least now I'm offering. No, you cannot go and do those things. They have the authority to determine what you can do at your location, and they have the authority to sue you if you try to do anything different.
You remember when we tried to get off of Amazon. We tried to get protein for our smoothie machine.
Oh, my God.
You would think that we were in there selling drugs the way they came down on us.
Right, because as a business owner, you're trying to cut on expenses. And so, to Alan's point, if you're like, yo, this is cheaper on Amazon, I might as well just order from here. Or I got a hookup somewhere, I'm just going to order from there. You can't. You're not allowed to do that. You really have to follow these very specific rules. You can't switch up the uniforms. You can't switch up the service model. You can't have a sale randomly one day. Like, these are things that you're not authorized to do. And so if you are not a rule follower to the T, to the book, franchising very well may not be for you. And that's okay. It's a con for some people. It's a pro for others. But interestingly enough, like, we've had experience recently with some franchisees within our system, and they've just realized that, like, they're just creative people. They've got their own ideas. They've got their own things that they want to do. And they're realizing that franchising may not be a good fit for them solely because of that, because they want to be able to do their own thing. Personally, I commend anybody who can figure that out so that you can make the pivots that you want to make. But don't get up in these people's system and then all of a sudden want to switch things up and then get pissed. Like, we are telling you up front, you've got to follow. The book is thick. An FDD is hundreds of pages. Like, the operations manual, all the training, it's not a suggestion. Like, it's 100%. Like, this is all that you're allowed to do.
It doesn't say you may want to try it this way.
You know what I mean? If you like to, feel free to. It's you better.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, straight up. And they will bring out the hands. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, for real. You'd be like, I thought we were friends. I thought we were all on the same page.
Speaking of friends and I thought we were friends, they're your frenemy.
Yeah.
So there's some issues that naturally put you at odds with the franchisor. Let's just go through those for a second. Number one, the franchisor gets paid on sales. You, as the business owner, gets paid on profit. These words sound similar, but they're very different. Sales is what happens off the top. Profit is what happens after your expenses are paid. Perfect example. Your franchisor might say, hey, this would be a great location for you because I think you'll make a lot of sales, but they might not factor in that the rent's going to be crazy high and that you may not make a lot of profit.
Right.
Another example of them being your frenemy is the way they make rebates off the vendors. They might suggest that you buy your potatoes from this place because they get a kickback, where you might be better off buying it from somewhere else. That again, is a conflict.
So you have to keep in mind, like, even though you guys have a common goal, you still got to have your own back, right? And, like, when we talk about the franchisor relationship, it's more of a frenemy relationship.
And the last thing I'll say is that they might have the goal of putting a unit on every block in America, but for you, you might just want to make money and it doesn't make sense for you to open up 10. You might need to open up one or two. They might try to encourage you to open up a lot more than you're ready for. That's your frenemy.
That's your frenemy. Now, okay, pros and cons. We've done the pros and cons. I think we've kind of really honed in on that. Now, say you're like, listen, I want to do this. I'm down. I've been thinking about this for a while. Before y'all did this podcast, this podcast was a sign that I need to move forward. How much should I invest?
No more than you can afford to lose.
Yeah, so that's the real thing. Like, if you've got $500,000 in your retirement savings, do not invest $500,000 in a franchise. You have to be willing to put up what you'd be willing to lose if this goes completely, completely wrong. Oftentimes we say about no more than 20% of your investments.
Yeah, that's a good cap. We'd also say, like, you've also got to make sure the rest of your portfolio is safe and that it's making income for you so that if this doesn't work out, it's not going to be detrimental to you. You also have to factor in the loans. Like, if you're taking out loans, so let's say that example, someone's got $500K, they put $100K into a franchise, but then they're going to go borrow $300K. That's $400K worth of exposure, right? So you have to really think about the total picture of what you're signing yourself up for.
Yeah, like, we consider franchising or any type of alternative investment, oftentimes they can be a bit more risky. And so we want you to always think about diversification in your portfolio. And again, making sure this is a sliver of your full investments, including your real estate, your home, your retirement, all those things, so that if things go really, really wrong, it hasn't ruined your world. But if things go well, you know, it's all good from there. Alan talked about loans. It is very likely that you will have to take out some sort of loan, whether it's an SBA loan or a traditional business bank loan. And oftentimes you can borrow up to 70% for the total cost of that business. A loan, even though it's not your money, it's your money. It's your money that you're going to pay back, all right? And that's a real liability. That's something you're really, really responsible for that can have a major impact on the rest of your life. So again, you put some of your own capital up. If you got to get a loan, take that loan very, very seriously because you're on the hook for it. If the business doesn't work, you still got to pay that loan.
Absolutely. So we're almost out of time, but we should talk about some questions you should ask yourself before getting involved with a franchise.
Yeah, you still may not be sure. I'm not sure. We've said some things that might have confused you or maybe some things that have excited you. So here are the questions that you should ask yourself before buying into a franchise. First, as we just mentioned, how much can you afford to pay for a franchise? Not only that, where is this money going to come from? The reason why you need to ask this question is because this will determine what type of franchise you can buy. You can't buy an IKEA with $5,000,
yeah,
right? You might have to buy a Mary Maids or whatever the case is, just being honest. But knowing how much you can afford to put up for a franchise really puts a filter on what type of franchise, what franchises are available to you.
The next question is around geography. Like, what territory do you want to own this business in? Are you willing to move? Sometimes franchises make you move to a different city.
Yes, Dunkin' Donuts.
Chick-fil-A.
Dunkin' Donuts and Chick-fil-A, because they are so successful, because the brand awareness is so strong, they are able to tell their franchisees where you're going to go. Mm-hmm. You're not going to say, hey, I'd love to put a Dunkin' Donuts over here. Instead, they're going to say, you know what? We need a Dunkin' Donuts in Iowa. You moving or no? And if not, then we're moving on to the next person, you know? And so they're not necessarily looking for people who already live in Iowa. They're just looking for the people who are willing to open the business there. Chick-fil-A is the same. They determine what market they want to be in, and then you are going to decide whether or not you're going to get out or lay down. It's not up to you to say, we really do need, a Chick-fil-A in Columbia, Maryland. Like, yeah, maybe not. You might have enough. They might not be focusing on you right now. So you either will have to sit and wait or move.
Absolutely. The final question is, do you plan on working in the business or not? And if so, how many hours are you or your spouse or your nephew, how many hours are y'all willing to commit? Because it does require an active commitment.
Yeah, there are certain franchises that require you to work in the business. Chick-fil-A again. But there are other franchises that don't. Like, Alan and I do not work inside of our franchises. But then that means you have to account for the expense of those hours. So if you're not willing to work in your own franchise, or nobody in your family or in your network is going to work in that franchise, then you have to make sure you put the money aside to pay that full-time person, to pay those full-time people that are going to cover the hours that you're not willing to work.
Big shout out to Gina Sanderson. We love you so much.
Very much so.
Best manager ever.
Very much so.
So we've talked about a ton. You know, I think, again, you know, we've talked about this from the angle of putting up money as the owner of the franchise. You could also be an investor. You know, like, we have investors who've passively come in and they've written a check and they don't have to go and show up. But that's also another way to get involved as a franchisee, is as an investor.
Yeah, this is our first of many franchise conversations. I think this is kind of like our franchising 101. We're going to continue to get deeper. We're going to continue to tell you about our experiences as we grow in our franchise space. But thanks for tuning in. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors. Show.